You've never seen that at church before. It's Courage the Cowardly Dog. I don't know if you've seen the cartoon, but there are a lot of things that made him scream. He was terrified of all kinds of things. So let me ask you today, what is it that makes you afraid? You know, what is it that makes your heart kind of thump out of your chest? Like, wow, this is really a scary, scary time. One of the things that many of you know is that Denise and I are in the process of renovating a 100-year-old house in Hershey. And one of the features of this house was a huge green awning, bright green awning that spanned the entire width of the house, the length of the front porch. And we couldn't wait to take it down. It basically blocked the sun, the air under it got pretty stagnant, and it became like a landmark. Like, if you want to know where to go, just like look for that house with the peeling roof and the big green awning. You can't miss it. It's like neon, like in your face neon. So we look forward to taking it down. And finally, the day came 3 weeks ago, and we took it down. And that was a great moment. But you know how the mind works, and you know how dreams happen to us? Bad dreams? Well, it turns out that I woke up that night pretty angry at Denise because she had done something that really got me worked up in my dream. Because it turns out that someone from Amazon said that we ordered a very expensive bright green awning to install at our home. And I know we didn't order this awning, but when the FedEx guy, and this is where my dream picked up, the FedEx guy was delivering the big, bright, green, neon awning to our house in Hershey, and he refused to put it back on the truck. I said to him, we didn't order this. I don't want it. He says, I don't care. He was very adamant. He was angry. He said this. He said, you ordered the bright, green awning, and you're going to keep the bright, green awning. Like, man, talk about customer service. So anyway, you know how when you have a bad dream, sometimes you're thrashing around at night, you have night terrors, you're sweating, that kind of stuff. You wake up angry at somebody even though they were just part of a dream. Well, that's what happened. And that bright green awning came back as a nightmare. I tell you, there's a lot of things we can fear. And some of the things we fear are way bigger and way more complicated than an awning that just won't go away. There are other things in our lives that just kind of really get us, really raise the blood pressure, make us incredibly anxious. And today, as we continue our look at the life of David, we're going to see that fear really is part and parcel of this life we live. That every one of us is going to deal with fears. Every one of us is going to deal with anxiety at some point. We are so prone and tempted to worry. But here's what I want us to see in the midst of this, that fear is part of life. But if we don't control fear, if we don't control our anxieties, it'll become a giant that actually dominates and takes over our lives. It can actually paralyze us. That giant of fear has tremendous, tremendous power if we feed it. But the great news here is that God has something entirely different in mind for your life and mine. He has an entirely different direction that he wants us to take. When we face these obstacles and challenges and terrifying, scary moments in our lives, he wants to cultivate us within us in those moments a courageous heart. He wants to develop within us an inner fortitude that we did not have and could not manufacture on our own. He wants to help us deal with the giant-sized struggles that come our way. And today I want to look at the life of David because he's someone who faced his giant head on. He faced overwhelming odds. He faced a giant that would seem to dominate his life, to preoccupy his mind and steal his joy. All the things it does to us, sabotage our health and undermine our relationships and ruin our future. Fear can destroy us, and David's life shows us how we can navigate that, move forward, and overcome it with courage. Last week, we left off with David, who has been anointed the future king of Israel. David was the guy who wasn't invited to the party. He was the guy whose brothers were uber talented. They had the resume for success. And well, David, he was a shepherd guy. He was a sheep kid. He just hung out in the field, and his own dad didn't see his own potential. But God did, and God anointed him to be the future king of Israel. And after David was anointed king, he went back to what he always went back to. He went back to his routine. He went back to the field. He went back to the sheep. And as it turns out, when he's in the field alone with the sheep, he was also in the field alone with God, reflecting on his faith and reflecting on the direction of his life and reflecting on his relationship with God. And this is what made him great, and this is what gave him a great inner power. His brothers, on the other hand, were called to war. Turns out their hated enemy, the Philistines, were gathering, that there were war clouds on the horizon, and his brothers found themselves on the battle lines against their hated enemy, the Philistines. We'll pick up that story in 1 Samuel 17. It says, "Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socah in Judah. They pitched a camp at Ephes Damon between Socah and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their base battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, and the valley was between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was 9 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like that of a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, 'Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects, and you will serve us.' Then the Philistine said, 'This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man, and let us fight each other.' On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all of Israel was dismayed, and they were completely terrified." Each day, these opposing armies would gather for battle. They would gather on opposing hills, one on this hill and one on the other, with a valley between them. And every day the same thing would happen. Goliath, this incredible imposing giant, would emerge from the ranks, burst forward and taunt and bully and try to intimidate the people of Israel. And what he proposed every day was what we know in ancient times was called a representative battle. In other words, he would enter the battle and he would fight the most courageous, vicious, skilled warrior among Israel's army. They would battle, and if he won, then the Philistines would then take the victory and Israel would be subjected to them. If, in fact, the Israelite warrior won, then the Philistines would then be subjected to Israel. It was a representative battle. He proposed it every day, 2 times a day, over and over again. But no one took him up on his offer. Nobody stepped up to take on the giant, because this wasn't just an ordinary warrior. This man was unusual. He was imposing. He was fierce. He was vicious. This man was 9 feet, 9 inches tall. As we kind of look back in history, we say, well, I'm 6'2", so add 3.5 feet onto me, I can't even hardly reach high enough. That's what that man looked like. Take Shaquille O'Neal and DeMarcus Cousins and your biggest basketball player, your most favorite player, and add 3 feet to him, 2 feet to him. Take your biggest lineman for Penn State or the Eagles or the Steelers and add like 2 feet to them, and you get a humongous imposing figure that struck terror in the hearts of people. He was a walking tree. He'd walk out and everything was in its shade. Not only was he a huge man, but he was well equipped for battle. He wore a bronze helmet. He wore bronze leggings. And he also had ancient Kevlar. He had an ancient type of Kevlar where he wore a inner lining garment that was made up in such a way that that it had little ringlets in it, little bronze ringlets all through it that would prevent a weapon from penetrating and killing him. It was made of canvas, and it basically weighed 200 pounds. It shows you the power and strength of this man, that he could take a typical man's weight and carry it around with zero problems. He was that imposing. He was that strong. He was that powerful. He also had weaponry, the tip of his spear. He had a spear that was a dominating and foreboding tool for war and battle. It was like a weaver's rod, thick and solid, and on the end was a 25-pound weight of sharp spear that he'd thrust through anybody, go through them like a tank round and destroy them. No one wanted to mess with Goliath's spear. If that wasn't enough, and just in case you weren't intimidated enough, he also had one more layer of protection. He had a shield bearer. There was a man who had run out in front of him as he entered the battle with a huge man-sized shield. And he'd carry the shield so that Goliath would be protected from projectiles that might come down from the army from the other side. That the only way to really deal with this giant was to actually get into close proximity to him. That you're going to have to do hand-to-hand combat. You can't just lob some rocks on him and you know, make him disappear. No, his shield bearer made sure if you wanted to deal with Goliath, you're going to have to do it directly, almost face-to-face. Clearly, in the midst of all this, verse 11 tells us that the odds are stacked against anyone stepping into the battle, even giving this an attempt. There was great fear and terror and dismay. I think in many ways, as we read this story, Goliath, you know, is a picture of the challenges and the intimidating circumstances that you and I can face in our own lives. We face our own Goliaths. There are moments when we really have to deal with these fear-inducing moments, these difficult people that even threaten us, and it's challenging. It's very, very hard to move forward with our lives. I think we see in this story, first of all, that you and I can expect to face giants. We can expect to face giants. We can expect to deal with our own Goliath moments where we feel desperate, where we feel even despairing, like we feel like we're on the brink of defeat, like this is too big for me, this is too imposing, this ominous cloud that has gathered on the horizon has entered my life and now it's entering my heart and I feel just frantic, like how do I deal with this? Every one of us faces those moments where a Goliath breaks the routine of our lives, our carefully crafted plans. He breaks into the routine of our lives and those moments like, man, I have a path forward. This is the ideal world. I'm trying to create a nice trajectory for the future. And Goliath comes along and roars and says, I'm going to take that away. And it's hard. It's painful. It's agonizing. It creates this anxiety. Maybe your giant today is financial loss or a marital struggle. Maybe it's just a sense of foreboding that you feel in a world that is increasingly hostile and vicious and uncaring, where compassion has drained away, and you just have this general sense of angst. Maybe you have a fear about sickness, or you've gotten a bad report from the doctor. Maybe there's just a sense that you have in your mind, in always going in the background, this anxiety that's kind of the backstory to everything you think about and feel. All of us face giants. This generalized moment of anxiety can be part of it too. And in the midst of all those kinds of things, the most important first step to develop a courageous heart and to deal with our Goliaths is not to be surprised when they enter our lives. To not be surprised when we hear that roar and we see something looming. To recognize that, in fact, that happens to every single person. That the rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous. And the first step to having a courageous heart is recognizing that our heart will always face these kinds of challenges. But Goliath wasn't just a menacing force because of his imposing size. There was something else about this giant that made him even worse. Because Goliath didn't show up like just one time. I mean, it would be enough for you or me if a Goliath-sized challenge entered our lives one time and like, whoa, this is scary, oh yeah. But then it just, time passes, it's gone. That wasn't the case here. Goliath was someone who showed up day after day after day after day. 1 Samuel 17:16 says, "For 40 days the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand." Goliath was one who showed up every day, two times a day, to bully, to intimidate, to threaten, to terrorize the people of Israel. He came with loud, gruff voice and angry taunts. He loomed large, but here's the thing. Giants loom larger and larger and larger the more they continue on. They can become a menacing force that's chronic. And the rantings and ravings of this powerful, defiant man created this contagious fear, this anxiety that spread. The impact of his life and his words and his menacing presence grew, got bigger. The giant got bigger and bigger and bigger every day, to the point where it says this in verse 10 and 11 of 1 Samuel 17. "Then the Philistine said that this day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other. On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed." They were terrified. They were without hope. They were void of courage. They were hiding under tables. Their courage had waned away. They fought in this army. They were members of a crew that is a prestigious thing to be a warrior. And yet they were just full of shame because they couldn't step up to fight this defiant giant. Fear spread to the point where it actually caused broad panic. Verse 24, "When the Israelites just saw the man." After a little while, it's just, oh no, there he is again. He didn't even say anything yet. He just showed up and we saw him. It's the same thing. He's going to do it to us again. They all ran from him in great fear. I think what we see here in this story is this, that an unaddressed giant will dominate and ruin your life. An unaddressed giant is going to dominate. It is absolutely going to ruin your life. Now, giants can't be ignored. If you have a conflict with a friend, if you have a marital issue going on, if you have some kind of addiction in your family, if there's some kind of issue that's happening in your life, a negative slandering coworker, an unethical situation at work, whatever it might be, it's so easy for us to just step back and say, "I'm just not going to deal with it. I don't want anything to do with it." To just step back and say, you know, I don't want to handle it. It becomes then the elephant in the room. And you're in the room and it's like they got this elephant. Everybody knows the elephant's in there. It's blocking the light. It smells bad. But what elephant? There's no elephant. Then what do you keep bumping into? It tends to be this way we cope. It's easier just to say, it's not there. We sweep stuff under the rug and then we wonder why there's a big bulge in the rug, why it keeps tripping us up when we're walking around our house, because we've got an unaddressed giant that's killing us, that's sapping our energy. Because this is what happens for you and me. You see, every one of us has a certain level of energy where we max out. We have a certain amount of energy. And if we're using a chunk of that energy to nurse a grudge or to hide our stuff or to pretend the elephant isn't there, inevitably that energy gets wasted. Energy that should be used to build up our families, energy that should be used to work on our marriages, energy that should be used to bless our kids and help them find a better path and the right path forward for their own lives, energy that should be used for ministry and service to other people. We find ourselves spending energy kind of keeping this giant hidden, this Goliath undercover, when in fact it's affecting us more than we're willing to admit. And it hurts us. It hinders God's best for our lives. And we can't just sit around and complain about the giant or ignore it or run away from it or cower from it. We need to address the giant. And addressing our giant may be different for different situations. The Bible talks in Matthew 18 about the way we address differences that we have with other people. And we're going to have differences. There's going to be conflict in our lives. You know, the Bible talks about direct communication being the key to problem resolution. That's how we resolve our problems, talking directly. So gossiping about people, gossiping about this, you know, no, that doesn't solve anything. That makes it worse. It just spreads the anger and the frustration. So these things don't work. So one of the things that we need to do as Christ followers is if we have something going on, a giant-sized problem with another person, we need to talk directly with them, maybe with others as well, that we need to have a conversation to resolve this. There are, of course, situations where talking directly with an abusive person can actually make the situation worse. It's in those moments when we need to prayerfully consider, how do I address this giant in prayer? How do I address this giant by monitoring my own heart so that I don't become, you know, that kind of person myself, that I bring grace into the circumstance, that I act in a way that brings about peace? Because we need to do this because here is the truth. A lot of people today live defeated Christian lives because they've not been willing to address their giant. They've been unwilling to face down the Goliaths in their own lives. And this affects their relationships. It sabotages health. It sinks us spiritually. It drains our energy. And it's not just a matter of dealing with it once. See, here's what's really bad about Goliath. He keeps coming at us. He keeps coming at us. You don't address it, it's going to keep happening. It's going to keep happening. It keeps coming at us. But here's the other thing. He keeps coming with us. He doesn't just keep coming at us. He keeps coming with us. So our Goliath situation is it with us when we're driving in the car. Goliath situation's in it with us when we're at work. Or we're going to Aruba, man. We love the wind. We want a tropical locale. Let's go to Aruba. But guess what? You pack Goliath. Goliath is in your suitcase. You bring him out. Like, hey, great. Okay, how'd you get here? I flew with you. We got Goliath taking this recurring role in our lives, in our minds, in our spirits. And so it's so important for us to step into this and say, I'm going to not just ignore or run from my giant, but I'm going to confront about my giant so it doesn't dominate and ruin my life. And Israel couldn't get that right. Israel didn't quite understand all this. Israel didn't deal with Goliath, and as a result was in full emotional retreat. They didn't have any hope. The courage drained away. No warrior stepped up. They were too afraid. And this giant was creating shame and anxiety and terror that spread through all the ranks of the military and throughout the nation. That is, until a little sheep guy, little shepherd guy, little obscure guy no one really thought much of, no king material in him. Everything changed when a man named David showed up on the front lines, when he showed up in the story. It says in verse 20, early in the morning, David left the flock with a shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed him. He was reaching the camp as the army was going out to the battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, facing each other, as they did twice a day. David left his things with the keeper of supplies. He ran to the battle lines and greeted his brothers. And as he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion for Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And then it says this, and David heard it. And David, the little sheep guy, the shepherd kid, he heard it. He heard it. David asked the man standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" It's interesting here. David does something here that no one else thought of. David does something here that eluded everybody else. They didn't even think of it. Didn't even dawn on them at all. You see, for the first time in this entire story, there's a reference to God. David's the one, the first one, to bring God into the equation. Not Saul. Saul doesn't even think about God. He's not thinking about it at all. He's supposed to represent God. He's the king of the nation that God created and gave birth to. So Saul doesn't even think of it. Eliab, this great guy, I mean, quarterback on the football team. He's got the resume, killer looks. He's got it all, and he's hiding under a table. And he doesn't think about God at all either. But David, the little shepherd kid, he does. And David comes along and brings God into the picture and says, "How can we stand for this, that he would defy the armies of the living God?" I mean, shouldn't we remember something? David's like, shouldn't we be remembering something? Isn't God the one who delivered us from Egyptian bondage? We were in bondage for all these years, hundreds of years, and God miraculously and powerfully delivered us from Egyptian bondage. Don't we remember that power, that amazing, miraculous moment? Isn't the God that we're talking about here the one who enabled us to enter the promised land, who took care of us, provided for us, protected us, enabled us to enter this land against foreboding obstacles and huge, huge, dangerous people? Did we forget this? The God who miraculously delivered us so many times over and over again, that God, why have we forgotten him? You see, Saul and Eliab and David's other brothers, and all these great so-called warriors, they made the biggest mistake of their lives. They made the biggest mistake imaginable. They made God irrelevant to their battle. They made God irrelevant to the face down they were dealing with. They completely forgot about God. They allowed God, with all his power and capacity, to remain on the sidelines. They allowed God, with all his ability to intervene and to make a difference and to change the circumstances around, allowed God to remain on the sidelines with power unused, power unaccessed. It'd be like me, you know, a football coach saying, "You know what? We're going to leave our superstar quarterback, we're going to leave him out of the game on the sidelines because we're just going to keep losing. We're just going to keep losing. We won't bring him in." The player that can call the shots, that has the arm to make the arm strength, to make the throws, the player that can lead this team to victory. "No, we'll leave him on the sidelines." And you're like, what? Like, what coach would do that? But we do that with God. All this ability and power, unaccessed, unused. Israel was doing exactly the same thing. And we do it as well. We say, "You know what? I'm just going to solve my own stuff. I'll use my own ingenuity. I mean, I'm smart, right?" We all say, "Yeah, I'm smart." We are smart. There are lots of things that you solve. There are a lot of problems you navigate. But inevitably, you're going to face something you can't. In fact, I'm convinced that sometimes God brings a giant into your life, and then a bigger giant, and a bigger giant, until you get to the point where you are at the end of yourself. Sometimes we just keep facing bigger and bigger giants because we keep trying to solve it without him. We keep making him irrelevant. And God's saying, "I'll just bring a bigger one." And eventually you're going to be in a situation where You can't solve it. That you're not going to have the resources, the capacity to deal with it. You need to get to the end of yourself, the end of your own resources, and then I'll show you true power. I'll show you amazing power. I'll show you breakthroughs you never imagined because you got to the end of yourself. That's what God does from time to time, saying, you know, we got all this courage we're going to muster ourselves, and God's saying, don't do it. Just turn to me, trust in me, let me make you courageous and see what I do, the power and breakthrough you'll experience. Because this story teaches us this, that we need to trust God rather than our own strength and savvy to win battles and defeat giants. Trust God rather than your own strength and savvy to win battles and to defeat your giants, because David did two things that were radically different than everybody else. He did two things. First of all, he allowed his relationship with God to change his perspective. He actually saw the giant, but he saw God. He saw God, and it changed his mindset about this, that I'm not going to be dominated by this. I'm not going to be overwhelmed by this. I'm not going to be destroyed by this. No, I see God in this, and it's changing my view. I'm looking at this through a God-shaped lens, through his eyes. He also shifted his power, that I'm going to draw power. I'm shifting my perspective, but I'm drawing on power beyond my own capability, and David was capable. He had lots of capacity. He had lots of ability. David was emboldened. He became courageous because he tapped into something no one else was tapping into, the power of God to change things around. We read this story as it continues in verse 32. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go out to fight him." And Saul replied, "You're not going out there, dude." It doesn't say it quite like that, but no, you are not going out there, okay? This Philistine, you're not going to go out there and fight this Philistine. You're a shepherd kid. You're a sheep boy. You're just a little dude. This is stupid. You're not doing this. I can't let you go out there. He's been a fighting man from his youth. But David said to Saul, "Your servant's been keeping his father's sheep." And Saul's like, "Exactly. That's the problem. You're a sheep kid. You came from the fields. That's what I've been saying all along." "Oh, no, you misunderstand, Saul." He said to Saul, "Your servant's been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it. I rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be just like one of them, because he's defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me as well from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Wow, go. Better you than me. And the Lord be with you too." Still could not believe it. David demonstrates immense courage in the face of insurmountable odds. It's a suicide mission. It's an absolute suicide mission to face down this giant. You know, it's got to be naivete. He's just young. He's young. He's stupid. You know, he's foolish. He's foolish. Or as his brother says in the story, if you read it yourself, he's conceited. He's full of himself. He's got this youthful kind of like drive, like, "Hey, I could do anything, man." And so he's conceited, but it was none of those things. It was his faith in God, his trust in God's ability that changed the equation completely. We read that in verse 37. What enabled him to have a courageous heart? He says, "The Lord who delivered me." He's the one who did this. "He delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, and he will deliver me as well from the hand of this boastful, arrogant, threatening giant, this Philistine." You see, David knew something that transforms every encounter we have with every giant. David knew something that enables us to tap into a power beyond our own capacity, beyond our own ability. David knew something that transformed his mindset in such a way that he tapped into an ability that was supernatural and transcendent. You see, David knew this, that the God who is behind us is always bigger than the giant before us. I want you to think about that, the giant is small compared to the largeness and power and capacity and greatness of God. That the God who's behind us is greater than the giant that looms in front of us. And so maybe we're looking at this situation, and maybe you're in a situation right now and you're looking at your life and saying, man, this giant, what I see, what has come into my vision is threatening, it's looming, it's ominous. These clouds are gathering, they're coming my way. They're going to consume me. I'm soon defeated because of my circumstances. And you're like, man, how do I get through this? But David could get through that. But despite what he saw, despite the ominous presence of this giant, he knew that the God behind him was far, far greater than the giant that loomed in front of him. Despite what he would hear, the boastful words of an arrogant man who would come and say, hey, I'll destroy you, I'll feed you to the birds, I'll take my weaver's rod and throw this through you like a tank shell right through your body. I'll destroy you in a millisecond, you have no chance whatsoever. I have more strength in half my fingers than you have in your whole body. This is something David learned over and over again, but he didn't acquiesce, he didn't give in, he didn't cower, because he knew something. He knew that the God behind him was greater than the giant before him. So whatever it is, whatever giant you're facing today, maybe it's the giant of loneliness. Maybe it's the giant of sickness. Maybe it's the giant of financial stress and problems in your life. You know, maybe you face some kind of setback. Whatever that might be, you can overcome this, not because of your capacity, not because of your temperament, not because of how you're wired, but because God comes into all that and gives you a courage beyond what you could manufacture on your own. You can overcome those things because the God behind you is greater than the giant that stands before you. It's true with fear, setbacks, obstacles. Whatever that might be for you today, know that you don't face this alone, that the God behind you, standing behind you, whispering in your ear in the midst of that fear and anxiety, whispering in your ear saying, you're going to be okay. I got this. I got you. And so my prayer today is that as you face an obstacle, setback, a giant, as you face fear and anxiety, and we're all going to, whatever causes that fear and anxiety, I want to challenge you today to be like David and shift your perspective, to see this through God's lens, through his eyes, to know that he's right there with you, and to tap into his power. Don't leave that power unaccessed because you're trying to figure it out on your own. Why act out in a weaker way when we can be so much stronger? Greater is he that is in us than he that's in the world. We're so much more capable when we tap into what he has readily available for us. So my prayer is that you'll adjust your perspective, you'll draw on new power, that you won't make God irrelevant to the battle, that you'll stop trying to figure it out and work it out completely on your own. And when you turn to him, and when you trust him in this way, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if all of a sudden there's something going on deep within your chest, something deep within your spirit and your soul, where God cultivates within your heart something greater than you've ever experienced before. He cultivates within you a courageous, courageous heart. Let's pray. Father, thank you, Lord, for real life stories of real people who face challenges like I do and we do, Lord, I just pray today that you'll just forgive me, forgive us for the times where we've gone into battle without you, where we've made you irrelevant to the circumstance because we think somehow our competency is enough. Lord, I pray today that we'll turn to you first and not last, that you'll be our first resort, not our last and final resort, that God, you'll work in our hearts this cool, growing, calm confidence that, Lord, you got this. You're with us. You stand behind us. That you're greater than anything we face. And we give you all the praise and thanks for who you are and what you do. We honor and glorify you in Jesus' name. Amen.